Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil Advocates Radio Show, a whopper of a Wednesday edition. Dominic, I feel quite confident. It's going to be a big show.
Happy hump day, Crudy. Evan on the board, our fair audience. I am in a really good mood today. Got Georgia on my mind, baby.
Yeah, Warnock wins. Warnock wins Wednesday, Dom. And Herschel Walker is the big loser. Yeah. And by extension, your buddy Donald Trump.
I'm so tired of winning, right? I mean, when someone talks about something like so much, aren't they overcompensating? Donald Trump, oh, we're going to win. Like all I said for years. And all he does is lose. Get in, losers. We're going losing.
We got the finest of shows, Dom, and the finest of guests, Bill Press, joining us in the Happier Happy Hour, Hour 2. So stick around for that. Also, a little bit closer to home, Rut Road. Doro, the new judge in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, Jennifer Doro,
yes.
Waukesha's favorite conservative, Dom. She's going to have a hard time claiming she's tough on crime. We'll get there. But one of her, let's just say, a defendant before her in the court who was sentenced to go to jail, she said, well, you can go home and visit your family. And he stabbed his family.
Well, at least his in-laws. We'll get to it.
We'll get there. Dom, let's start with a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. And this one has huge ramifications. The Supreme Court effectively deciding today whether or not democracy is, let's just say, optional. It's optional at the whim of the gerrymandered state legislatures, like the one we have here in the great state of Wisconsin, right?
Yes.
Doesn't matter how many votes you get. It's a 2/3 majority for the Republicans because they baked it in the cake. Suck it, Dems. Effectively, going on 2 decades. So, with that in mind, there was a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Oral arguments heard earlier today. And, Dom, I think we better update our audience because occasionally I ask you, what's the worst that could happen? Right. Well, the conservative bloc of the U.S. Supreme Court could find merit here and throw out democracy. To my opinion, that's one of the worst things that could possibly happen. Dominic Josh Gerstein and others at the Politico report the Supreme Court today struggled to find consensus about a legal theory that could strip state courts' abilities to review election laws passed by legislatures. But a critical bloc of justices seemed likely to reject the most robust version of that theory that could unleash dramatic change in how states oversee elections. The case Moore v. Harper involves North Carolina's congressional map. There, the state Supreme Court tossed the maps drawn by GOP-controlled legislature as an illegal partisan gerrymander, with court-drawn maps ultimately being used for the 2022 election. Republican legislators asked the U.S. Supreme Court to toss out those court-drawn maps, advancing a once-fringe legal idea called the independent state legislature theory, which argues that an interpretation of a clause in the U.S. Constitution leaves little or no room for state court review of election laws. And the spotlight for Wednesday's oral arguments was focused on 3 of the high court's 6 conservative justices. They include the Chief Dom, John Roberts, and Associate Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh. Those three justices will likely serve as the deciding factor in any decision. The court's three liberals were extremely hostile to the theory during oral arguments, while the three other conservatives, you know, Alito and Thomas, you know, the Dom fringe, they have signaled sympathy for the muscular version of the theory, yeah. both in previous writings and during arguments in front of the court on Wednesday. That leaves Roberts, Barrett, and Kavanaugh as the justices who will likely be the backbone of any controlling opinion of the court. Questioning from Roberts to David Thompson, who was representing the Republican legislators, showed hostility to the theory. Here's a quote, Dom. Vesting the power to veto the actions of the legislature significantly undermines the argument that it can do whatever it wants, Roberts said, citing a 1930 Supreme Court case that found the U.S. Constitution did not prohibit governors from vetoing a congressional map by the legislature. And Kavanaugh and Barrett's questions to Thompson were less revealing than those from Roberts, but Kavanaugh seemingly suggested that a version of the independent state legislature theory advanced by North Carolina lawmakers was going too far. He noted that North Carolina was trying to go further than then Chief Justice William Rehnquist's concurrence in the 2000 case Bush v. Gore. What a stupid, crazy ruling. Bush v. Gore, which is the origin of the theory that the state courts have overstepped their role and that they should be hemmed in some way. Kavanaugh also raised a brief from the Conference of Chief Justices, a collection of chief jurists from the states, asking how to square their writing about the history of the state courts applying state constitutions to federal elections with the independent state legislature theory. Barrett, meanwhile, also seemed skeptical at times of the argument that Thompson was advancing, noting that state constitutions could be amended.
Crudy, but later Roberts questioning to Neil Katyal, who represented the groups that challenged the initial legislatively drawn maps, showed how some of the court's swing conservative justices could still potentially rule in favor of the GOP lawmakers without embracing a robust interpretation of the independent state legislature theory. Roberts seemed to be potentially probing for a way to constrain state courts in some way, particularly on what could be decisions based on broad constitutional provisions. He asked Katyal, do you think the phrase fair and free elections is providing standards and guidelines? Katyal responded affirmatively. Roberts also expressed discomfort with the North Carolina Supreme Court's conclusion that it could use a vaguely worded commitment in that state's constitution to free and fair, quote unquote, elections to adopt a precise mathematical formula known as an efficiency gap to limit gerrymandering. Both Kavanaugh and Barrett questioned Katyal on the Rehnquist concurrence, with Katyal arguing that the federal judiciary, should intervene to second-guess a state court ruling on its own constitution only if the decision reached a sky-high standard of ignoring established legal principles. The court's liberal justices raked Thompson over the coals. At one point, Justice Sonia Sotomayor accused the GOP's legislators of trying to rewrite history of early state constitutions in an effort to support their point. She also said bluntly to Thompson that one of his arguments makes no sense to me. Justice Elena Kagan emphasized that the impacts of freeing state legislatures from restrictions placed on them under state constitutions would be sweeping. This is a theory with big consequences, she said. Justice Ketanji Jackson argued that the U.S. Constitution's reference to elections being administered by state legislatures made sense only in light of decisions of those states made to set up legislative bodies and delineate their authority, typically in a state constitution. Her quote, "What I don't understand is how you can cut the state constitution out of the equation when it is giving the state legislature the authority to exercise legislative power." Meanwhile, the court's more conservative triumvirate, Justice Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas, all broadly seemed more likely to endorse a more robust reading of the independent state legislature theory. But even among those conservatives, there was some ambivalence to the arguments put forward by the Republican legislators who advocated for a reading of the theory that would remove nearly all the state's state court's jurisdiction over congressional elections. Beyond that, Thompson face the broader challenge of winning over the two of the three conservatives who did not seem to accept the broader interpretation. There's been a lot of talk about the impact of this decision on democracy. Do you think it furthers democracy to transfer the political controversy about districting from the legislature to elected Supreme Courts, where the candidates are permitted by state law to campaign? Alito asked at one point. Wednesday's oral arguments will have ramifications far beyond just North Carolina's congressional lines, which have been redrawn several times over the course of the last decade. A robust adoption of the independent state legislature theory by the court could grant state legislatures significantly more power in setting the rules of the road for elections. A maximalist version of the theory would prevent state courts from weighing in on disputes over everything from voter IDs to last-minute polling place adjustments, and could even imperil voter pass referendums, creating independent redistricting commissions that take over traditional legislative powers. Some would even go as so far as to use the federal constitution to deny state governors their usual role. Getting the Supreme Court to sideline governors would require overruling the 90-year-old high court precedent Robert cited, which may be why Thompson stopped short on Wednesday of advocating for such an outcome.
Seems like they're trying to set aside democracy, Dom. I mean, the plaintiffs in this case, the arguments being made on behalf of the Republicans from North Carolina. Well, Dom, I got to agree with Justice Kagan. They don't make any sense to me. And there was another earlier posted political article. You know, when something's in the news, they tell you about recent writings on the topic. Back in September, they wrote this article at Politico, same source we quote. Fraudulent document cited in Supreme Court bid to torch election law. Supporters of the independent state legislature theory are quoting fake history. Just a little bit here, Dom. Supporters of a legal challenge to completely upend our electoral system are citing a fraudulent document in their brief to the Supreme Court. It's an embarrassing error, and it underscores how flimsy their case really is. Now, it says this fall, today, the court will hear Moore v. Harper, an audacious bid by Republican legislators in North Carolina to free themselves from their own state constitution's restrictions on partisan gerrymandering and voter suppression. I mean, isn't it for all the right reasons, Dom? You know, if we could suppress some votes and we can stick it to our own constituents where they don't really get to have a fair and free say in who they elect, constitutionally speaking, because to do this, of course, you've got to set aside big parts of the North Carolina Constitution. But it's all fair and love and politics, right? Come back with us. Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It's never personal. Only politics.
The Devil's Advocates. Making radio great again.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You can join us on the phones, 844-967-2789. Our pal Bill Press going to join us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour.
Dominic, we talked a lot, at least started the show, talking about this potential upending of democracy. And I got to tell you, most of the information I know about this twofold. Two lawyers have taught me on this topic. Matt Flynn from Matt Flynn Direct. You know him, you love him. And James Santel. I have heard Jim give a specific lecture on this very important case. Oral arguments heard earlier today. So we're going to defer to the expert tomorrow when he joins this big show. Jim Santel in the 5 o'clock hour tomorrow. And of course, his big show, Morning Cannolis, each Saturday morning right here on the Civic Media Network, with former U.S. Attorney James Santel, our good buddy. And Dom, since we're talking about legal stuff and Supreme Courts, Judge Doral, ruh-roh Doral, he's got a little problem, Dom. And Dan Kelly, the conservative opponent she will face, you know, during the primary, they all go, it's a Supreme Court race. They don't claim you're our. But she's a conservative, as is
we all know better,
Dan Michael. Kelly. And the supposed liberals are Everett Mitchell and Janet Protasiewicz. But anyways, let's talk about Rutro Doro for just a minute. Judge Doro allows suspects, a suspect, singular, a certain individual suspect, 2 days to go to jail. Instead, the man attacked his family. I guess it was his in-laws, Dom. Does that make it better? The presiding judge on the case, Jennifer Doro, is running for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Doro also presided over the trial of Darrell Brooks, convicted Waukesha Parade attacker, right, Dom? This originally, at least the source I'm going to quote, where'd this one come from? DMJ 4 in Milwaukee. Little local news coverage, Dom. An Oak Creek man accused of stabbing his in-laws in Illinois. He didn't just attack him. He attacked him with the knife, Dom. Stabbing his in-laws in Illinois has been sentenced to jail the day before. However, a Waukesha judge running for state Supreme Court allowed him 2 days to report. The news team is reporting, Dom.
Get your affairs in order. Apparently his affairs included stabbing his in-laws.
Well, the good news is, you know, then he turned himself into jail. Michael Liu, 36, was supposed to report to jail December 2nd to serve 4 months. Guess what the charges were, Dom? Domestic violence over the summer. Judge Jennifer Doro sentenced Liu on November 30th and allowed Liu 2 days to report. According to Will County Sheriff's Department Facebook post, during those 2 days, Liu traveled from Oak Creek to Crete, Illinois, to exact revenge and his soon-to-be ex-wife's parents, according to the Will County Sheriff's Department. On December 1st, Liu fired shots into the home of his ex-wife's parents and broke into the home, stabbing the 66-year-old woman. The 68-year-old man intervened and was stabbed as well. The man defended his wife, stabbing Liu an estimated 17 times. According to law enforcement, all three were expected to survive. Now, Wisconsin court records show 2 days later, let me restate that. 2 days earlier, Liu was in Waukesha County courtroom facing 8 counts of domestic violence-related charges after an incident with his family over the summer. According to the criminal complaint, one of Liu's children was crying and he grew frustrated. The complaint says he threw a magnetic block across the room. Then he's accused of charging at his wife and yelling at her. The complaint says Liu punched his wife in the shoulder and she took the children into a room. The complaint continues saying Liu forced the door open, took a hammer, and smashed one of the children's iPads in the hallway. According to the wife, there is a history of domestic violence. The complaint says it has been going on for at least the last 8 months, dating back to December of 2021. A little bit more. After the incident, a 72-hour no-contact order was in place, so Liu was not legally allowed to contact or be around his wife. The next day, a family friend contacted police after Liu made concerning statements to them. According to the person, the complaint says Liu said something similar to, "I'm going to kill one of the kids and me." When police confronted Liu about his statement, he said he was joking and did not mean the statement, according to the complaint. The complaint goes on to say when police contacted Liu's wife, she said Liu tried to call her multiple times, which would be in violation of the 72-hour no-contact order. A neighbor Liu was staying with called his wife and asked where the family's handgun was located, the children's birth certificates, and social security numbers. Liu was charged with 8 different counts for this incident, including stalking, battery, disorderly conduct, criminal damage to property, and contact after domestic abuse arrest. Now, Dom,
let me just jump in here quick. I know we're going to run out of time. Liu had a plea sentencing hearing where he pleaded guilty to 3 counts, battery, criminal damage to property, and contact after a domestic abuse arrest. Judge Jennifer Doro, who is running for state Supreme Court, sentenced him to 4 months in jail with work release and probation. According to court orders, Doro allowed Liu 2 days to report to jail. It was the next day the Will County Sheriff's Department said Liu traveled to Crete where his in-laws were injured. Judge Doro's campaign team provided the following statement regarding her decision to allow Liu 2 days to report, and I quote, "First off, my thoughts and prayers are with the victims for a speedy and full recovery. In this case, I sentenced Mr. Liu to jail despite it being his first offense. It's unfortunate he did not report to jail as ordered and instead went to Illinois. It's unfortunate? That's literally the end of the statement. It is unfortunate. So, you know, for a judge who is certainly leaning on her, you know, new celebrity as a tough on crime, to have a case like this recent go sideways like that. You know, certainly things can happen. I think, you know, there's a lot to address here. The domestic abuse, or the domestic violence that we have in this state and this country, and perhaps the laws aren't good enough for what we're dealing with. But Judge Doral, man, that's a pretty weak statement.
Dan Kelly, I'm sure he won't use any of this against her in the contested primary February 21st.
No, none.
Keep it locked. More of the Big Wednesday Devil's Advocates edition.
Shame on you.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It will be a whopper of a Wednesday edition, I assure you. A fine guest joining us in the happy hour, Bill Press. He's a pundit, a podcaster, a friend of ours. And Dom, you know, as we ran down some of the headlines of the day, we didn't even mention that there's more classified documents on Trump properties, right? I mean, think about this. Just before we dive into this headline, Dom, no one should be stunned by this news at this late hour. But the guy's already, what, gone through the FBI investigation. He had the chance to clean up his books, you know, clean up his house, literally clean the house of the classified materials. He knew they were coming. He brought in outside inspectors at his own bequest. In fact, invited the FBI to observe them. They're like, we know how to search. When we're ready for our search, we'll issue the warrant. But anyways, Tom, with all that, all these known circumstances, Donald Trump brings in outside inspectors, and they find more freaking classified documents. How is that possible? How can he be that sloppy?
I don't know, man. Maybe the attorneys are turning on him. Washington Post reporting lawyers for Trump found at least two items marked classified after an outside team hired by Trump searched a storage unit in West Palm Beach, Florida, used by the former president, according to people familiar with the matter. Those items were immediately turned over to the FBI, according to these people, who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive matters. The search was one of at least three searches for classified materials conducted by an outside team at Trump properties in recent weeks after Trump's legal team was pressed, I tell you, by a federal judge to attest that it had fully complied with a May grand jury subpoena to turn over all materials bearing classified markings.
Did you fully comply? Pretty sure.
I think we did. I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's just like Austin Powers. Where's Dr. Evil's secret lair? You got to ask, what, three times? You don't have to ask three times. Of course you don't. You got to ask once, and then you send in your folks. But, yeah, this is not surprising whatsoever. Emails released by the General Services Administration, which assists former presidents during their transition to private life, show that the government agency helped rent the storage unit at a private facility in West Palm Beach on July 21st of 2021. The unit was needed to store items that had been held at an office in Northern Virginia, used by Trump staffers in the months after he left office. So they got to wonder, then, were these documents in the Northern Virginia office? Emails show that the GSA and Trump staffers worked together to arrange to ship several pallets of boxes and other items weighing more than 3,000 pounds from Northern Virginia to the storage unit.
Loose documents, Dom.
A person familiar with the matter said the storage unit had a mix of boxes, gifts, suits, and clothes, among other things. It was suits and swords and wrestling belts, all sorts of things. To my knowledge, he has never even been to this storage unit. I don't think anyone in Trump world could tell you what's in that storage unit. You know, swords and suits and boxes and 3,000 pounds of stuff that apparently were in a Northern Virginia office with his staffers. So how sloppy is that?
Kind of sloppy. A lot sloppy, Dom. It seems quite sloppy to be.
In addition to the storage unit, Kruti, the team hired an outside company to carry out the search of Trump's golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, and more recently, Trump Tower in New York. The outside team apparently also searched at least one other property. So, I mean, does that make people happy? I know people have been saying, oh, you got to search. I mean, does that satisfy it? Are you done bitching about it? Or are you still kind of mad that, you know, his golf club and his Trump Tower has been searched? Are you satisfied, Michael?
No. Why would I be satisfied by Trump's after the fact, after the FBI has already executed a warrant, the guy's got a special counselor looking at charging with him criminally, and he brings in an outside company to come and clean up the mess, and they found more classified documents. It's like finding another body in the cooler. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I forgot about the couple of bodies in the cooler. I forgot about those bodies.
Forgot about
bodies.
The one on the floorboard. Yeah, right, dude.
So am I shocked or surprised? Not at all. Ultimately, though, aren't these all just paperwork crimes?
According to you, they are, Michael.
So that was another one of the big headlines of the day, Dom. You know, they're big. They're big, but not surprising. But this is kind of a big deal. Any other president, if it was Hillary Clinton, how big a deal would it be?
I mean, seriously. Well, to the Republicans, again, it's this disconnect, right? It's their guy, so it's not a big deal to them. I mean, it is certainly discouraging to see that you give your own a pass. Because, I mean, Kruti, obviously, from my perspective, if it was Bernie Sanders, if it was my guy who, you know, got in there and all of a sudden was this sloppy and this flippant with our nation's, you know, most cherished secrets, I'd be mad about it. I mean, I'm not going to let, you know, my political persuasion and my love for Bernie dissuade me from the criticism that would be due him should he react like that. But apparently, if you're on the MAGA, whatever the cult leader does is all good with you.
Well, along those lines, Dom, here's a headline I found at thehill.com. Trump hosts Mar-a-Lago event with prominent QAnon Pizzagate conspiracy theorist. That's after the Nick Fuentes Yee dinner, right? This is the newest new. Brad Dress reporting today, Dom. This one dropped this afternoon. Former President Trump hosted a prominent QAnon and Pizzagate conspiracy theorist at his Mar-a-Lago club on Florida on Tuesday night. That's last night, right, Dom? 2 weeks after his much-criticized dinner with Yee and white supremacist Nick Fuentes. This crank's name is Liz Crockin. Not Kraken, Crockin. C-R-O-K-I-N. A former journalist and celebrity gossip writer now associated with far-right conspiracy theories. Well, she spoke at a fundraiser intended to combat child trafficking. You know, what else would you pick as a pet issue, Dom? According to post on her Telegram account, at the event, Crockin said she discussed Pizzagate, a debunked conspiracy theory suggesting Hillary and Bill Clinton and other political elites run a child sex trafficking ring at a pizza shop in Washington. It never quite made sense to me, but I read on. Crockin also discussed the fashion company Balenciaga. I've seen that name quite a bit. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it properly, which has recently taken heat for a photo campaign featuring children and plush bears with bondage, sadomasochism accessories. Sounds like some sort of plush you'd have at the house, Dom. Trump, who last month declared himself a 2024 presidential candidate, made an appearance at the event. You are an incredible people and doing unbelievable work, he said in a video shared by Crockin. It's got to be Crockin. We just appreciate you being here. I hope you're going to be back. The Hill has reached out to the Trump campaign for comment. Trump received backlash, you might recall, Dom, including from high-ranking Republicans for dining with Yee, the rapper formerly known as Kanye West, along with Fuentes at his Florida club last month. Yee recently praised Hitler and Nazis for making multiple rounds of anti-Semitic comments and social media posts over the fall. Fuentes, you might recall, Dom, is a known white nationalist and Holocaust denier who has been condemned for racist and vitriolic remarks. And Crokin, C-R-O-K-I-N, is an early embracer of the QAnon conspiracy theory, which alleges the world is run by a shadowy cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles and that Trump is the only one that can stop them.
I mean, it makes so much sense, doesn't it?
One last thought here, Dom. In 17, Crokin infamously picked fights with celebrity Chrissy Teigen and John Legend after she suggested the couple were part of the Pizzagate conspiracy. Crokin has been banned from most social media platforms, but she has more than 100,000 subscribers on her Telegram channel. She's originally from Illinois. She's a Flatlander, Dom, and began her career as a tabloid journalist, much like you.
Yeah, come on, man. And these are the more... Trump is consistent in the level
people.
Of quality people that he brings around. I think you have to give him that. He's very consistent. I mean, scumbags and losers all the way around. I mean, Satan worshiping pedophiles. I mean, and I'm pretty sure they eat the children. I think there's some cannibalism going on there as well, according to Q, or at least drink the blood, something along those lines. And for this person and Kanye West and Nick Fuentes and the rest of these nut jobs that, you know, get an audience with the 2024 GOP top contender, presidential contender. It can't bode well. And I just don't see what is the point? I mean, really, you're having a fundraising to combat child trafficking? I mean, you see who Trump was palling around with all those years?
You mean Epstein? Because I always kind of thought Trump was kind of pro-child trafficking.
I mean, certainly kept those in his company. So, I mean, how low can you go? Well, I mean, if you got a shovel, you can keep on going, I guess. And that's what Donald Trump is doing.
Tom, you know, it's pretty bad. I went over to Foxy News. I was wondering how they're absorbing the day's headlines. Here's what I found, an opinion piece. Herschel Walker just wrote Donald Trump's political obituary. Now, I've heard that before, that Trump's had multiple political obituaries. I'm not convinced he's dead yet. But here is what Liz Peek says. It's time for Donald Trump to step away from politics. You think? Herschel Walker, the Heisman Trophy winner who led the Georgia Bulldogs to a national championship back in 82, just wrote Donald Trump's political obituary. I hope so, but I doubt it. Walker lost his bid to replace Georgia incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock. We've got some sound, Dom, handing Democrats in that chamber a critical majority. A majority which will enable Joe Biden to appoint more judges, enact more legislation, and put in place more appointees willing and able to carry out his far-left agenda. Walker was endorsed by former President Trump. Oh, she noticed. Having suffered the rare humiliation of failing to win a second term in the Oval Office and having cost his party a majority in the Senate three times, it's time for Donald Trump to step away from politics. It's the right thing to do for his party, the country, and Liz Peek claims for himself. I don't think he's walking away, Dom. Mr. Trump will not win another election. I agree with you, Liz. He will not. But he might win a primary. What's she write here? Mr. Trump will not win another election. His most glaring political strength today is his ability to energize Democrats, causing not only historic turnout, but attracting gushers of campaign cash for the opposition. That's why I like the guy, Dom. It is notable that the Trump-backed candidates all came up short in fundraising. The Georgia Senate race cost more than $400 million. As of mid-November, Democrat Raphael Warnock had outspent Republican Herschel Walker about two and a half to one, about $126 million to less than $50 million. In Pennsylvania, Arizona, New Hampshire, and numerous other races, Trump-endorsed candidates lost the fundraising battles by huge margins. Huge! In the marquee Pennsylvania Senate race, Trump-endorsed Dr. Oz was outraised by Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman by tens of millions of dollars. And similarly, just weeks before the election, Mark Kelly, a Democrat running to keep his Senate seat in Arizona, had raised nearly $75 million. GOP challenger and Trump pick Blake Masters hauled in less than 10. In addition to encouraging record-setting fundraising, Trump-less candidates have also inspired historic turnout from Democrats in Georgia. Participation in both early voting and on Election Day set records. Way to go, Georgia. Unhappily, the results are sometimes historic, too. In recent midterms, Joe Biden performed better than any incumbent in decades, losing only a minor number of seats in the House and retaining control of the Senate. And do not chalk up that success to Biden. Of course, no Foxy News contributor ever would, Dom. Blame it on Trump. She says Biden's completely unpopular. And Trump, Donald, please, please leave now, gracefully. Because it's the only way he knows how to exit, right? Gracefully?
Never going to happen. They're going to drag him away.
Come back, more devils. Take this microphone out of his cold, dead hand, I say.
I declare
declassified.
Percent of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines open for your take. 844-967-2789. Our pal Bill Press going to join us at the top of the hour.
Dominic, you might be off the hot seat. I've been waiting for your candidacy to commence in the 8th Senate District. Obviously, your state senator, Alberta Darling, has resigned. You are without proper representation. But thank goodness, Janelle Branchon, who I suspect is a better man than you anyways, Dom. Branchon's in. Knodel's in. I see there's a couple more Republicans of lesser notoriety that have gotten in that race. And thank God, Dom, we got a Democrat. Jody Habish-Sinikin announces her candidacy for the 8th Senate District. Thank goodness. Woo-hoo! That mean you're off the hook, Dom? Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, on Wednesday, December 7th, Jody Habish-Sinikin announced her intention to run for an open 8th Wisconsin Senate District seat recently vacated by Dom's girl, former Senator Alberta Darling. Habish-Sinikin is running to be the first Democrat to hold this seat since Joseph Sarnitsky in 1992. It would be a privilege to represent the people of the 8th Senate District in Wisconsin State Senate, said Habish-Sinikin. As anyone who has lived and worked in the district for most of my life, I am committed to creating opportunities that foster a strong sense of community and ensure open dialogue between residents and myself. I will be a senator who listens and learns from the constituents of the 8th District, working to address the cost of health care, a woman's right to make her own health and reproductive decisions. Holy schmoly, that's a novel concept.
Wow, how very liberal is that?
Maintaining safe communities, ensuring a good education for our children, at a charter school, I hope you mean, and finding ways to ensure that area businesses and jobs can both survive and thrive in these difficult economic times. Habish-Sinikin continues, I feel fortunate to live in Wisconsin with its abundance of wonderful people and beautiful places, and recognize the importance of maintaining our democracy through respectful discourse and respect for our electoral process. As a Wisconsin state senator, I will deliberate and rational as I work towards solutions, and will conscientiously bring the voices of the 8th District with me to Madison. I hope to come April 4th, 2023, I will have earned that trust and support of the voters of the 8th. Now, the candidate, Jody Habish-Sinikin, is a longtime district resident. She grew up at Fox Point, attended Nicolet High School. After college and law school, Jody and her husband, Dan Sinikin, who was born and raised in Whitefish Bay, moved back home to Wisconsin in 1995, living in Bayfield and River Hills over the next 16 years, where they raised four children. The couple currently lives in Whitefish Bay. Jody is a graduate of the University of Michigan, go Blue, and Harvard Law School, go Crimson, I guess, Dom, and is a practicing attorney specializing in environmental law and policy. I bet she got a better LSAT score than you did.
Most people did. East Coast, highly Harvard-educated, environmental law, women's right to choose. I mean, what kind of liberal madness is this? I can't wait. She sounds great on paper. Hell, she's a neighbor. I also live in Whitefish Bay. I'm very much looking forward to meeting Jody Habish-Sinikin and introducing her, perhaps, to our fair audience.
What if you don't like her?
Oh, well, I can't imagine it'd be the case. We'll see. We'll see.
Janelle Branchen seems here all the time.
No, man, we can't. I mean, this is why. And I will not. I cannot have someone like Janelle Branchen or Dan Canola represent me. I mean, these are the antithesis of what democracy and self-governance is supposed to be. You know, if you lose, you lose. You walk away, you know, you practice, and you come back and play the game again the next time around. You don't put a lie in front of everybody. You don't lie to people and say, oh, there's fraud. There's not fraud. You had your opportunity. You may not like the fact that Zuckerberg and his organization were allowed to donate money like most people can. If you want to give money away, you may give money away. You might not like it. You might think that too much of that money went to populations that are too Democratic. Okay. But certainly that helps some of your Republican voters in those districts. I know how quickly Republicans are to martyr their own for the cause. They're fine with that. Hell, if it suppresses more of the other vote than ours, that's an equation we can live with. I mean, that this is totally unacceptable all the way around. I hope Jody gets that, and I hope my fellow district citizens get that as well.
You know, Warnock won last night in Georgia, and that by extension means Herschel Walker lost. And your girl, Marjorie Taylor Greene, seemingly has an explanation. An insult to me. Marjorie Taylor Greene says Herschel Walker's major mistake was not using her, Dom. Should have used MTG. She's got real star power. Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene lashed out at Senate Republicans after Herschel Walker lost his U.S. race in Georgia. In an interview on Wednesday, conservative podcast host Steve Bannon told Greene that Walker's loss was a disaster in Georgia. Here is what she said. This is for Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and the rest of the Republican senators. You guys are the reasons why we are losing Republican races all over the country. And this is your third loss in my home state. So let me inform you on behalf of Georgia. This is your third strike and you're out. Greene complained that the Walker campaign rarely asked her to speak at events. I was never asked very often by the Herschel Walker campaign to come speak at any of his campaign events. They only asked me to maybe two or three in his own district when he was campaigning all over the state running for Senate. But they only asked me a couple of times in my own district, which I find extremely insulting. One more comment from MTG, your girl, Dom.
Ugh.
The audacity and really frank rudeness of the campaign consultants and Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, where they thought, you know, we're going to keep Marjorie Taylor Greene away from Herschel Walker, and we don't need her voice at his campaign rallies and events where we're campaigning all over the state. I think it is really a major mistake and an insult to me and an insult to the people who support me and Republicans all over Georgia. MTG all over Georgia. Damn.
Well, it's all about her. Free use MTG, man. They didn't use her enough. I mean, talk about two, back guano crazy candidates. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Herschel Walker on the stage at the same time. I don't know if I could handle that. I mean, what kind of jackassery could possibly come of that kind of dynamic duo campaigning around the state?
Dominic, we saw Nick Van Orden, Janelle Branchen, Adam Steen, Donald Trump, and Tim Michaels all on the same stage in Waukesha. I mean, if that's not a cavalcade of Republican stars, I don't know what is. Come back. The Devils Advocates Radio Show. Our fine guest and good buddy, Bill Press. He's a podcaster. He's a pundit. He's a friend of ours. Stick around. The Happier Happy Hour, the Big Wednesday edition, is next.
You are one pathetic loser.